You want? All right, this should be lesson 13, and lesson 13 is covering the period of the captivity or the
exile,
right? The captivity or the exile. So the era before the captivity or the exile is the what, everyone?
Kingdom.
The kingdom, very good. The kingdom. The kingdom splits into a northern kingdom and a southern kingdom. The northern kingdom has how many tribes, everyone?
Ten.
Its name is?
Israel.
Israel, very good. The southern kingdom has how many tribes?
Two.
Its name is?
Judah,
named after the largest of the two tribes. David is a descendant of what tribe?
Judah,
very good. David is a descendant of Judah. The northern kingdom lasts for about how many years?
250 years,
very good. The southern kingdom continues for another 150 years. The prophet that we want to look at this morning in our discussion is the prophet Daniel. We want to talk about the prophet Daniel. If you have your Bibles, open them up to Daniel chapter number 1, verse number 1. Daniel chapter 1, verse number 1. Daniel is one of the many men. Daniel is one of the many Jewish men that were taken captive back to Babylon. Now notice I said Babylon, I did not say Assyria, because the difference is that Daniel is from Judah. So therefore it is the Babylonians that conquer these people and take them back. So there's a 150 year difference between when Israel goes away. Judah still remains a small country holding its own. Eventually, the Babylonians get so strong in power that they defeat the Assyrians and then go on to defeat the Jews. Part of the defeat is that you capture the best and the brightest and bring them back to your capital city. The city for Daniel, I think, is Susa, perhaps, or Babylon. Again, it's maybe a different name, maybe a different city. We're not sure. Sometimes things get confusing there. But in any case, he's not allowed to remain in Jerusalem. So the best-looking women, and the brightest young men are carried away back to the country. Why are they doing that?
So then they can be slaves. Hustle.
What?
They can be slaves.
Servants. What else? Why else are you doing that?
So that they can have the greatest.
Okay, so they have the greatest. But what are you trying to keep from happening in the country that you capture, Ken?
For them to be uprising.
Exactly, right. So if you take away the best and the brightest from the country that's there, carry them away into captivity, you leave behind the stupid, the lack of leaders, the mentally capacitated, the handicapped, the old women, the old men. Why are you taking young men? Why are you taking young women?
Because that's the new generation.
Right, exactly. That's the new generation. And you're going to make sure that the new generation gets assimilated into your culture, doesn't remain loyal to their own culture. So we can pick up with verse number 1 of chapter number 1 of the book of Daniel. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, the king of where?
Judah,
came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. What does it mean to besiege a city?
To attack it.
He conquered it.
To circle it and then surround it. And then by doing that, what can you do once you cut it off?
Take
a military. Well, what's the first thing you do? If someone was to besiege Fayetteville, they would cut off all the major access points, I-95 in the south, I-95 in the north, 401, 301, all the points. Why would they do that? Why would they cut off?
Nobody escaped.
What's that?
So you can't get out.
Right, so no one can get out, but why else? What else would you cause to happen?
Nothing can get in.
Nothing can get in. All right, what would happen if nothing could get in? What would eventually happen?
Starve. Starvation.
Yeah, starvation would kick in. That's exactly right. All the Walmarts would be out of food. All the food lines would be out of food. All the stores would be out of food. Nothing comes in. Nothing goes out. The gas stations would run out of
gas
and on and on. At that point, we become very weakened to defend ourselves. Ammunition would be used up, and once the ammunition that we had in the city was used up, there would be no more ammunition coming in. There would be no more evacuation, medical supplies, blood supplies, and you can go on and on with that scenario. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into the hand the part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God, and he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. The king spake to Ashpez, the master of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel. Now don't get confused right there. That phrase Israel there is not a reference to the 10 tribes, but the greater tribes. Because remember, we already saw it in verse number 1, king of where?
Judah.
So don't get confused. We're still in the southern kingdom. Of the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish. So if you have a zit, you can stay behind. You think that's what it's saying?
No.
Okay, so what's the description? No blemish. Why is the author using that kind of language?
Just not outstanding.
Right? Not to say what?
Not to say ugly.
Yeah, right. This is kind of a poetic way of saying the good-looking ones. What is the latest hip term for good looking? Kyla, when you see a guy and he's good looking, what word do you use to describe him?
Cute or hot?
Hot. Hot. All right. Are there any hot guys in this class? No. Warm.
I don't know.
Warm.
Yeah.
Okay. So you guys are warm. All right. But not hot.
That's cool.
All right. Well. Children in whom there's no blemish, well-favored, skillful in all wisdom, cunning in knowledge, understanding of science, such that had the ability in them to stand in the king's palace, of whom they might teach the learning of the tongue of the Chaldeans. Okay, so we're talking about the Babylonians. Chaldeans, another reference there. The king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. What is going on here? What is this program being described in chapter number 1?
That they're going to strengthen them up, and then the king's going to choose which one does.
That's right. This is a leader development program. This is a leader development program. Go into Jerusalem, find the best and the brightest, take them back to Babylon, feed them well, exercise them well, teach them everything we can for how long?
3 years.
For 3 years. And at the end of that three-year period, they will have learned the language. They will have learned how the king's thought processes are. We will give the king 20, 30, 40, 50, 100, we don't know how many men, to do what from?
Choose.
To choose, exactly, to choose. These are future leaders in the kingdom. Amongst that group, we see in verse number 6, were Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Is that how you pronounce that?
Azariah.
Azariah, very good. All right, the standout guy in that group is going to be who?
Daniel.
Exactly. Daniel's the one that we're going to talk about. Unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, and he gave them Daniel, and then these are where we get these new names, the name of Belshazzar, and then Hananiah got the name of Shadrach, Mishael got the name of Meshach, Azariah got the name of
Abednego.
Okay, so why do you give someone a new name? Felix, why would you give these young men a new name? Felix is going to tell us. He knows. Why would you give them a new name? Ken, why would you give them a new name? What would be the purpose of giving them a new name?
To give them a new identity.
To give them a new identity. What kind of identity do you want to give them?
Your country.
Yeah, your country's identity. So if you had a weird German name, we're going to get rid of that weird German name, and we're going to give you some type of a American name. You know, Steve, Joe, Billy, Bob. You know, something that was very American.
Like we do with the Koreans?
Well, sometimes they do. It's their choice, isn't it? But in this case, it wasn't their choice. They lost it. That was an intentional decision on their behalf. They're going to get rid of that. Verse 8. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the king's, with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Thereof he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. What is Daniel trying to retain?
His
say it.
His country.
His Jewish identity. His Jewish identity. Daniel wants to retain his Jewish identity. What is the retaining of his Jewish identity really all about? Yes, he wants to stay faithful to Yahweh. He wants to stay faithful to Jehovah. He knows that he's being carried away into captivity to a country of idolaters. And they're trying to get him to abandon his allegiance to the Mosaic law and embrace what?
The
new culture. He says, I don't want to do that. I want to retain my Jewish identity. I am a descendant of Abraham. God gave Abraham a promise. And God confirmed that promise to Isaac and confirmed it again to Jacob. And I am a descendant of Jacob, one of the 12 tribes, Judah, more specifically. And Daniel desires to do that. So the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord, the king who hath appointed me your meat and your drink. For why should he see your face worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall he make me endanger my head to the king. What is this going on? Someone help me understand. What's the dialogue here? Ken, what's going on?
If he goes and the king finds out, he might get killed.
Yeah, what would the king find out?
That he still wants to be in his culture.
It's more than that. Not just the culture piece. What else is going on, Heather?
He's still thinking that he's weaker because he's not been doing what all the other guys are doing.
That's right, because they've determined that a good diet includes wine every day. You know, the fruit of the wine. He needs to have lots of meat. He needs to have wine. He needs to have vegetables. We're going to feed you well. And if we're feeding these 12 over here well, and they're strengthening up, and you can see it in their complexion, and they're looking healthier, they're getting hotter and hotter. Right? That's the idea. Right? Chests are bulking up and all that. Ribs, you know, the lines this way and the lines that way and all that you girls like. All that's happening. And here's Matt over here. And he's getting thinner and thinner. And what's the king going to say? Hey, I paid you to train these guys.
He's disobeying.
You're not doing your job. So let's continue. Then Daniel said to Melchizedek, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. So that, remember, that's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. Prove thy servants, I beseech thee. 10 days, let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. What is pulse? Does anyone have something different than pulse? Vegetables, that's right, vegetables. Vegetables. Oh, we're talking about broccoli, cauliflower, zucchini. I mean, just... Oh, good?
Spinach,
right, spinach. Okay, and then what are they going to drink?
Water.
So no Dr. Peppers,
good.
No Mountain Dews. All right. So what is he asking for here with this 10 days?
So that he can
see how well they do compared to the other boys.
Yeah, he wants a test. Can we do a test? Can we do for 10 days? And at the end of the 10 days, if their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the other children which did eat the portion the kings met, then Melchizedek took away the portion of the meat and the wine that they should drink and gave it unto them pulse, vegetables. For the 4 children God gave them, and as for these 4 children, and remember, they're not children. They're not little boys. They're young men. Okay, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, somewhere around there. That word there maybe might give you the impression these are like little 5-year-olds. That's not the case. God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was none like these 4. None. There's Daniel right there as the leader. None. They go through a PSATs. And these guys just blow the doors on the testing, okay? They talk intelligently about stars and skies and the universe and land navigation and business matters and financial matters. They just have more wisdom than everyone else. Where's this wisdom coming from?
God.
It's coming from God, exactly. So this is all a God thing. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding, the king inquired of them, and he found them 10 times better than all magicians, astrologers that were in all the realm. And then verse 21 says, and Daniel continued even unto the first year of King Cyrus. So what that tells us is that Daniel began as a young man when Nebuchadnezzar was in charge, and he went through a series of kings until the very first year that Cyrus was in charge. So the 70 years that we're in captivity, because you need to understand, when we go into captivity, Nebuchadnezzar is the king of the Babylons. When we end captivity, Cyrus the Great is the king. And that period of time lasts for 70 years. So Daniel dies in captivity. Daniel dies in captivity. He doesn't get to go back to Jerusalem. God raises up at the end of this new leaders. Anybody know a name of one of these?
Nehemiah.
Nehemiah, exactly. Another one?
Ezra.
Ezra, very good. These are new leaders with a new king. Daniel gets to work for at least two, three kings, the last of which is Cyrus. 70 years of captivity. If Daniel was 14 years old when he went into captivity, 84 years, that's a good life. If Daniel was 20 years old, that's 90 years, that's even a better life. So he's a full life. So chapter 1 just gives us how Daniel got there. Ken, look at verse number 1 of chapter 2. So now we go back and we've got Nebuchadnezzar and he's got a dream. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar dreamed dreams with his spirit. He was troubled. Then the king commanded to call the magicians, the astrologers, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans to show the king his dreams. So they came and stood before the king. All right, what happens here? How do they do?
Terrible.
How do they do? Not so good. Not at all. Okay, not at all. So what happens? What do?
They tried to show him his dream. It didn't really work.
Say that again, Matt?
They tried to show him his dream. It didn't really work.
But it didn't work. That's right. So let's turn to verse 11, and it is a rare thing that the king requires. What was the rare thing that the king was requiring? Anybody remember what the rare thing that the king was requiring? All right, let me tell you what it was. Not only did they want him to tell what the dream was all about, he wanted them to tell him the dream. Like this. I had a dream last night. Now tell me what my dream was and what it meant. That's one thing to say, I had a dream last night, and I saw 12 trees, 3 birds, and okay, and then you can start thinking in your mind, 12 trees, 4 birds, north, east, south, west, for example. You see where I'm going with that? You can begin to interpret it. The birds represent this, the trees represent this. That's not what Nebuchadnezzar said. He thought that they were blowing smoke. Do you know what I mean by the expression blowing smoke? Does anyone have any idea what that means?
Full of baloney.
Oh, excellent. Full of baloney. So the way he thought he would take care of this is, not only am I going to expect you to interpret the dream, I'm not even going to tell you what the dream I was, that I had. Now you've got to figure out the dream and what it meant. Mm-hmm. Now that's weird. Agree or disagree? Okay. So this is their response. It is a rare thing that the king requires. There is none other that can show it before the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with flesh. You know what they said? King, you're asking something that no human being can do. No human being knows what another human being dreamt. Did you have a dream last night, Star?
Yes.
Okay, I have no idea what you dreamt. You know why they have no idea? Yes, because I'm a human. Humans don't know what... The only way I would know what you had a dream about was if you...
told you.
Yeah, you told me about it. Then you could tell me about your dream, and then I could kind of say, well, Star, that guy that you came is the guy that you've always wanted to marry. And, you know, I could... That wasn't your dream? Okay. Then I don't know what your dream was. But Nebuchadnezzar wanted them to tell him the dream and what it meant. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which had gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. To slay the wise men? What's going on here?
He's killing them because they were lost.
Yeah, Nebuchadnezzar said, get this, guys. He said, if you can't tell me my dream and what it means, you're dead. He kills them. He's going to kill them. He's going to execute them. All right, here's how it works, Matt. You got 15 days to tell me what I had a dream about and what it means. At the end of 15 days, if you can't, you're dead. Now remember, we can't understand this, folks, because we live in a democracy with rights and privileges and a Bill of Rights and a Constitution. They didn't have any of that stuff back in those days. The king could execute people anytime he wanted to. Anytime. So you're walking down the street and you see this guy and he gives you a weird look. Dead. Dead.
Ashley.
I should be the queen.
I'm so
I look at Ashley all the time.
Right, well, if you keep looking at Ashley like that, she's going to have you executed. Yeah. Then Daniel answered with counsel and wisdom to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, which had gone forth to slay the wise men of Babylon. And he answered and said unto the Anak, why is the decree so hasty from the king? What's going on, Daniel says. How's this happening? Then Daniel went in and desired of the king that he would give him time and that he would show the king the interpretation. Then Daniel went to his house and made the thing known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah's companions. And they would desire mercies of God of heaven concerning this secret, that Daniel and his fellows should not perish with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So once Daniel found out that he was part of the group that was going to get executed, he went in to see the king and he asked the king if he could get him some time. After that, he went back and found his three running buddies and they had themselves a prayer meeting. What were they praying about?
Tell us this vision, please.
Yes, Lord. Reveal this vision to us because we really don't want to die as such young men in Babylon. We don't want to die in Babylon. By the way, let me tell you one of the reasons why they didn't want to die in Babylon. Let me explain this to you for just a moment. If you recall for a minute that right before when Jacob was dying, he made Joseph promise something. Does anyone in the class remember what Jacob made Joseph promise before he was dying? Anyone? He made him promise that he would not leave his bones where?
In the waste.
In Egypt. He wanted him to carry his bones back to the promised land and bury him in the promised land. Do you know why?
Homeland.
Yes, but it's more than that. It's more than that. They all believed that they would be raised from the dead someday. And they wanted to be raised from the dead in Israel, in the promised land. So now you're getting a better understanding of why these boys don't want to die in Babylon. Where do they want to die?
Israel.
They want to die in Israel. They want to die in the promised land. They want to die where their forefathers have died. And so they're concerned. The secret was revealed unto Daniel in a night vision. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, for wisdom and might are his. What is Daniel doing right there in verse 20? He's giving God what?
Glory.
Glory, that's right. God changes the times and the seasons. God removes kings. God sets up kings. God gives wisdom unto the wise and knowledge to them that know understanding. God reveals the deep and secret things. God knows what is in the darkness and light and darkness within. I thank thee, God. Praise thee, O God, of my fathers, who has given me wisdom and might, who has made known unto me now what we desired of thee, for thou hast now made known unto us the king's matter. Therefore the king went in unto Arioch, whom the king had ordained to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus unto the king, destroy not the wise men of Babylon, bring me in before the king. I will show the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought Daniel before the king in haste, and thus said unto him, I have found a man of the captives of Judah that will make known unto the king the interpretation. The king answered and said to Daniel, whose name was Belshazzar, art thou able to make known unto me the dream which I have seen and the interpretation thereof? And Daniel answered in the presence of the king and said, the secret which the king hath demanded cannot the wise men, the astrologers, the magicians, the soothsayers show unto the king. But there is a God in heaven that reveals secrets and makes known to the king of Nebuchadnezzar what shall be in the latter days. Thy dream and the visions of thy head upon thy bed are these. As for thee, O king, thy thoughts came in thy mind upon thy bed, what should come to pass thereafter, and he hath revealed secrets made known to thee what shall come to pass. But as for me, this secret is not revealed to me for any wisdom that I have more than any living, but for their sakes shall make known the interpretation to the king, that thou mightest know the thoughts of thine heart. So the first thing Daniel does is he gives God all the what?
Glory.
All the glory. All the glory. And then we have in chapter number 2 this amazing dream of this giant. Look at verse 33. Verse 32. The image head was fine gold, breastplate, arms of silver, belly and thighs of brass, legs of iron, his feet of iron, part of clay. Thou sawest till that a stone was cut out without hands, which smote the image upon thy feet that were iron and clay, and break them into pieces. By the way, this massive stone coming is God. It's a future conqueror. We'll just keep reading. And then he just gives us all this imagery, this descriptions. Verse 36. This is the dream, and we will tell the interpretation thereof before the king. And then he goes through and he gives them the first world empire, the Babylonian one, the second world empire, Medes and Persians, the third world empire, Greece, the fourth world empire, Rome. And he just goes through and he tells them the future. He just uses this dream to lead them down through various empires. Verse 44. And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up a kingdom which shall never be destroyed, and the kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break into pieces and consume all these kingdoms, for it shall stand. All right, so let me go to the dry erase board. And we've actually crossed the line, and we're talking about prophecy. Now, those of you that know anything about prophecy, a little bit of prophecy, and if you've been in Sunday morning churches this lately, you know we've been talking about a 1,000-year kingdom in the future. Anybody remember that? We call it a millennial kingdom. A millennial kingdom. Anyone? Yes? Yes? All right. Before that millennial kingdom is the second coming of Christ. And at the second coming of Christ in the future, someday, God is going to destroy the enemies of God on this earth. And so this amazing, massive statue that the king saw with a gold this and a silver this and an iron this and a clay this, all that stuff was God's prediction through this dream of future empires. And it goes from head down to toe of the future. The Roman Empire being here, and then some kind of quasi-Roman Gentile empire in the very bottom. We're not exactly sure what that is. It's not important to know the exact details. What's important to know is that the text says that out of nowhere, so to speak, a large stone came in the dream and destroyed the statue. Destroyed the statue in the king's dream. And that stone represents the second coming of Jesus Christ and the great destruction that will come. And then what did we just read in verse number 44? And in the days of these kings shall the God of heaven set up what?
Kingdom.
A kingdom which shall never be destroyed. The kingdom shall not be left to other people, but it shall break into pieces and consume all these kingdoms, and that kingdom will stand forever. That kingdom is the millennial kingdom in which Christ rules forever and ever and ever. And after this, there is never a day in the future where there's a new Roman Empire, German Empire, Czechoslovakian Empire, on and on. This is the only empire from there on out. So basically, Nebuchadnezzar had a dream of the future of the world and the destruction and the coming king. That was essentially the dream. How does Nebuchadnezzar respond? Then the king Nebuchadnezzar fell on his face and worshipped Daniel and commanded that they should offer oblation and sweet odors unto him. The king answered unto Daniel and said, of a truth it is that your God is the God of gods and the Lord of kings and a revealer of secrets, seeing thou couldest reveal this secret. So now just think in your mind. What is the probability that you could have a dream last night and tell me nothing about it, and I could pick your dream, and not only pick your dream, but get this level of detail, like a gold head, iron legs, silver this, a breastplate. What is the probability of being able to pick that?
Zero.
Zero? Astronomical? Impossible? So God raises up Daniel, moves him over here, introduces him to Nebuchadnezzar, gives Nebuchadnezzar this bizarre dream, right? King wakes up in a cold sweat. Why? Because he sees himself as this king. And the big rock comes out of nowhere and destroys him. So what is he thinking in his mind?
Something's
going to
kill me.
Yeah, I'm going to die. This is about me. And that's why he won't even tell anybody what the dream is. He's too afraid to communicate the dream. It was that scary. Have you ever had a dream that was that scary before? Mm-hmm. I have. I've had dreams where I've just woken up. Right in the middle of the night from the dream. Anyone besides me, or am I the only one?
No,
yeah. Yeah, one or two more. The rest of you are... Yes? Even you? Mm-hmm. Okay. Yes, it's scary. That's the kind of dream. And he doesn't even want to talk about it. That's how scary it is. When Daniel can interpret it with this level of specificity, he is overwhelmed with Daniel and Daniel's God. So this is all about God getting the what?
Glory.
All about God getting the glory. All about God getting the glory. And so what happens now is Daniel is now elevated to be quite the leader. Quite the leader. This sets up all kinds of jealousy within the kingdom between the captives and the local nationals, so to speak, or the Chaldeans. This sets up all kinds of controversy and jealousy and bickering and back and forth, because this Jew comes out of Judah and now all of a sudden he's the leader. Because notice verse 48, please. Then the king made Daniel a great man and gave him many great gifts, and they made him ruler over the whole house, the whole province of Babylon, chief of the governors over the wise men of Babylon. So this young snot-nosed punk kid from Judah now is in charge. Is now in charge. This helps you figure out why they go after Daniel in the weeks to come, months to come, try to get him to worship the false god. Remember, they create a big statue. They insist that the Jews bow down at it. All those kind of events. Daniel in the lion's den. Remember all those things that are going to happen in this. It's all based on this amazing amount of jealousy. All right, does anyone have any questions about our introduction to Daniel?